Welcome to The Extra, the show that connects you to the issues, topics, and people that are important to you. And today, would you know this? In less than 30 days, the Families First Prevention Services Act, a federal law aimed at overhauling the child welfare system, goes into effect. And while there are several changes that are long overdue, other mandates could cause challenges to those who advocate for kids and families throughout the region. So joining us this morning to talk more about this issue and give us more information on the Families First Prevention Services Act, we are so pleased to have with us Lee Osterly, Executive Director of Kids Crossing. Lee, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Katanya Jones is Deputy Director for Children, Youth, and Family Services for El Paso County's Department of Human Services. Katanya, welcome to The Extra.
Good morning. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Oh, so glad you could join us. And Katanya, we're going to be talking to you a little later on in this show. But Lee, let's start with you. First, your organization, Kids Crossing, some of our listeners may not be as familiar with it as others. So why don't you share some information? Introduce us to Kids Crossing.
Sure. Kids Crossing is a private nonprofit organization here in Colorado Springs. And we are licensed by the state of Colorado as a child placement agency, which means we can recruit and train and license and support foster homes here in the county. And we also have an outpatient behavioral health clinic where we provide therapy, and we also provide in-home services, often called family preservation services, to families here in the community as well.
So your organization will sometimes act as a nexus in some of these services that are provided that will be directly impacted by the Families First Prevention Services Act. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you know about this new law?
Sure. In the title, Family First, I mean, it's talking about wanting to keep children and youth at home whenever possible when they become involved in the child welfare system. So additional funding is being provided to the states, which will be given to the counties in Colorado, in order for them to put services in place, therapy, but as well as in-home services I just mentioned, where someone can go into the home and help the parents, help the family dealing with conflict, dealing with neglect issues. And so that's a big part of the act. The other part of the act is saying that when kids do get placed into foster care, that whenever possible, they should be still be in a family setting, which would be a foster home. And so it's going to reduce the use, the reliance on residential placements. They're going to want to keep the kids in their community, in their school, in a family setting. And when they do go into residential care, the goal is to have them be a shorter period of time and come back home or back to a foster home. And this will lead to an increase in the use of foster homes.
And you've kind of touched on it, but in summary, I mean, we all talk about this word pivoting. It sounds like a lot of organizations will be pivoting because of the changes that will be wrought with this legislation. What do you see as the changes that will have to be made to the current child welfare system?
Well, I think that residential programs are going to have to kind of look at their business model and figure out how to do more short-term placements, crisis placements, and counties and child placement agencies are working harder already, but are going to have to continue to work to recruit and retain more foster homes. We don't have enough foster homes before this act became a thing, and certainly being implemented next month. So there's a lot of pressure on finding people who will become foster parents for kids.
And we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment, but I do want to touch on this. You co-chair a statewide working committee that has been preparing for these changes, trying to smooth the way for these changes to take place. Tell us about the topics you've been discussing in this working committee.
Sure. It's a committee that's made up of stakeholders from throughout the state. Child placement agencies, county departments, state representatives, judicial representatives. And the main thing we've done so far is create a new level of foster care. And it's called therapeutic foster care, therapeutic foster homes. And these are going to be homes that take teenagers, sibling groups, more difficult teens. And but the idea, again, it's going to allow for foster parents to get reimbursed at a rate that will allow them to not have to work outside the home. It could be a two-parent family that both become foster parents for these youth. It could be a home where one parent works outside the home, one stays home, and it can be a single parent foster home. But these foster parents are going to be reimbursed at a higher rate than foster parents are now, in order for them to do this really as a job and be compensated adequately. They're going to need to be involved with the youth school. They're taking kids to therapy appointments, to medical appointments, taking kids to soccer practice or swimming lessons or piano lessons. And so there can be up to six youth in a therapeutic foster home. And the rate I talked about that was established is $99 a day for a youth placed into your home. And so care for two youth, that's a little bit over $70,000 a year. And I use the term reimbursement because it is reimbursing the foster parent for their time and their care. It's not considered a salary or wages. They're not taxed.
Oh, so this is it's outside of the tax system, because if it was income, if they were salaried, like you said, it would be, you know, minus 30% or so in taxes, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
We're going to be talking a little bit more about this concept. This is a big advance, a big change, and it will probably open the doors to more people considering becoming foster parents, people who may have not thought it possible with their current situations. We're continuing the conversation over the new Families First Prevention Services Act. It's a federal law, but it will have definitely local impact. So we're going to continue the conversation here on The Extra after these messages. And if listeners would like to find out more information about becoming a foster parent, Lee, they can go to kidscrossing.com, correct?
That's correct.
All right. We'll be back with more of The Extra after this. Welcome back to The Extra. Our guests today are talking about the Families First Prevention Services Act, set to overhaul the child welfare system. It's a federal change that is going to have local impacts, definitely, and taking effect within the next 30 days or so. Katanya Jones, who's Deputy Director of Children, Youth, and Family Services for El Paso County's Department of Human Services, is going to join us now. First of all, good morning, Katanya.
Good morning, Shannon.
Well, we always like to start off our segments and our new guests by introducing them to the work that your particular department or organization is doing. So why don't you introduce our listeners to the role of Department of Human Services in the community?
Sure. I'd be happy to. So Department of Human Services, also known as DHS, has a range of supports for our community. DHS provides access to support programs and services. Services such as food assistance. DHS also strives to protect those who are most vulnerable in our community. And my division specifically, which is Children, Youth, and Family Services, is focused on child protection and family supports. That's the work that begins with a report to the Child Abuse and Neglect Reporting Hotline. And of course, I must mention that hotline number real quick.
Oh, you bet.
It is 1-844-CO, the number 4-KIDS. Again, that's 1-844-CO-4-KIDS.
And we'll be mentioning that number throughout this morning's broadcast. Okay, so you mentioned providing support for kids and family, and we mentioned the hotline, again, 844-CO-4KIDS. But what other ways do you support kids and families?
Sure. Specifically within the Division of Children, Youth, and Family Services, our caseworker professionals work with families. They aid in identifying specific needs and supports, which can and often includes additional family members to make sure that children are safe.
Now, with this new Families First Prevention Services Act, you probably anticipated the changes that this was going to make. How do you think it's going to impact the work you do?
Well, first of all, it offers an opportunity and an expectation, or opportunity through expectation, to challenge the systems that serve youth, which of course includes child welfare. It challenges these systems to engage our community and other system partners and a youth's natural support in a more proactive and sustainable manner. You know, an overall philosophy of Family First is to break down the silos between systems. And I'd like to note, too, that this is the first time that the Children's Bureau has formally recognized the importance of prevention. It will also push youth and family teams to ensure that youth are safely served in the community in a family or family-like setting, as opposed to a more confined or highly structured setting.
And so when you're talking about some of the challenges that the foster care system faces, specifically, you know, what are some of those that you can identify that will be directly impacted by this?
Well, one that I can identify that is, in my mind, a critical one is we need a community of support. And one way to build that community is to grow the number of foster families, especially those who are open to fostering a youth over the age of 12 and up to the age of 17, and particularly for youth that are working through complex behavioral needs.
Now, we know that the act was designed to bring about some positive changes. When you talk about, for instance, the therapeutic foster parents or families or adults that are potentially going to be enabled through this act, is that one of the ways that you see positive impacts taking place?
Yes. You know, the intent is to keep kids safely with family. Sometimes families need extra support, so it gives the opportunity for those additional supports while keeping families intact. This act will, again, break silos of systems for ease of collaboration. And those supports will include evidence-driven interventions. And what that looks like will vary from family to family. Colorado is in the process of determining what is needed and what works best for Coloradans. And it might look different from one community in Colorado to another.
Rural versus urban, for instance, that's one way, or the mountain communities, definitely. And I love the term that you talk about, breaking down silos, because that term siloing, it kind of came to the forefront maybe a year, two, 3 years ago. But it so well describes some of the incompatibilities that can happen when you don't have that collaboration, that communication that gets over obstacles that may be there just because, you know, of proximity, of that's the way we've always done it. I mean, it, you know, it certainly is a way of describing the situation. And when it comes to foster care, I'm imagining that that term applies very well.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Shannon.
If people want more information, and again, let's make sure people know that hotline to report any suspected child abuse or neglect that you may have observed or may know about, 844-CO-4-KIDS is the hotline number. But Katanya, why don't you give us some more places where people can find resources?
Sure. You can definitely find resources at elpasocounty.com. And if there are listeners interested in learning about Family First, more about Family First, becoming a foster family, or preventing child abuse and neglect, they can always visit co4kids.org. That's co, the number 4, kids.org. There are a ton of videos and webinar recording that will help with the understanding of this act.
Okay, and hopefully entice more people to really consider the idea of becoming a foster parent. Coming up, we'll talk more with Ketanya Jones and Lee Osterly about the Families First Prevention Services Act, a federal law that's going to have local impacts. That's coming up as we continue with The Extra. We're back with The Extra, the show that connects you to the issues, topics, and people that are important to you. And today the issue that we are talking about is our children, the community's children, the children who are in need and sometimes ending up in foster care through cases that are brought, through other means, but also how there is a new act, the Families First Prevention Services Act, that is going to be enacting some changes in how foster care is looked at and what placement actually looks like. And joining us right now to continue our conversation, Lee Osterly, Executive Director of Kids Crossing, a local nonprofit. All right, so Lee, we heard how Kids Crossing provides child placement services as well as counseling services. Why is that so important when working with foster children?
So involvement of the foster parent with the therapy is really critical. The foster parent can inform the therapist about how that youth is doing during the week in between sessions. But it's also important for the therapist to be able to talk to the foster parent and give them some guidance and support around their involvement and interactions with the youth that is in their home. The other thing is this allows us to provide support, crisis support, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So with for a foster parent, if they need some support, somebody's going to answer the phone from Kids Crossing anytime, day or night, and someone will come to their home anytime, day or night, if that's necessary to support the foster parent and the foster youth.
Because sometimes those crises may happen, you know, in just a whisker's time, and then there needs to be that support in place so that they don't feel like they're doing it alone, I'm imagining. And Families First is going to essentially provide proactive services to keep a child in the home. So when foster placement is needed, homes should be in a family setting. Why is that a challenge, Lee?
Well, I think that, again, with not having enough foster homes for these older youth, sibling groups I mentioned, I think really is from the perception that we've had for so long that about foster care, that it's about opening your home, having a child become part of your family, adopting them, making a long-term commitment, and that's not the case. That's not the you know, type of foster home we're looking for now. These youth have families. They're going to go back to their families. They need to be someplace temporarily. And with someone who can, again, provide the care they need during that time. And so, you know, our challenge, the work group we mentioned, you know, is to get the word out about this new type of care, and really appreciate, again, you allowing us to come on and help educate.
Right. And you've talked about this shortage of homes. I understand, especially homes that will take teenagers. That's a very difficult shortage to be facing. How are the plans going to try to address this issue?
I think that, again, providing, you know, more comprehensive, more collaborative kind of care. Ketanya, you know, referred to the breaking down of silos. There's a lot of efforts to coordinate the care for these kids so that, you know, if they're in a foster home, if there's a crisis, they need to go to residential care. We work together, the foster care agency, the residential agency, the foster parent, to help stabilize that youth and get them back to the foster home. The other thing with the work group is that we're looking at how to coordinate recruitment efforts, again, to get the word out about this new level of foster care to really talk about how these kids, you know, are in our communities, in our neighborhoods, and needing resources from there to help keep them there and you know, help support them. We are looking at recruiting in specific areas with certain demographics, such as professionals that are already working with these kids, like teachers, nurses, therapists. I think we've all read about how some teachers and even some nurses are not going back or to work or are retiring earlier. We had a teacher call the other day who recently did leave the teaching profession, but is interested in perhaps working with these youth as a therapeutic foster parent.
Mm. Fascinating. And we know child safety is the number one priority. But then when you balance that against a shortage of homes, it certainly sounds like that can be a difficult challenge, financial challenge as well. And we understand, there's financial burdens on the county as well. I'd like you, Lee, to talk about that. And maybe afterward, Katanya can chime in with that.
Sure. I mean, it's always been the case that it's more expensive for the county departments, which is it's taxpayer money, but it's always been more expensive to have youth in residential care rather than in foster homes. This act adds another layer of that, in which it will sanction the states if they have youth in residential care that should be in foster homes. And so that's going to provide more financial pressure on the counties. And so I'm glad you asked about, about Katanya chiming in, because I don't know if I explained that very well, Katanya.
Katanya, why don't you go ahead?
Sure. I'll piggyback a little bit on what Leah said, the financial impact on the counties. And when we say counties, we don't mean the Department of Human Services in and of itself. The Department of Human Services is a part of the county. So when we say counties, we mean county largely. So it will be, we anticipate it being a broad impact, not just isolated to Department of Human Services. And so in short, group homes and group centers will no longer be reimbursed to the counties. So to respond to some of that, the state in collaboration with counties have been working towards expanding the placement options overall to ensure that youth needs are being met. As an example, we're working on passing the rule that will create, as Lee had mentioned earlier, those what I call specialized foster homes, therapeutic and treatment foster homes. We're figuring out how to access psychiatric residential treatment also for youth, and working on the creation of qualified treatment programs. The overall intention is for youth in care to get individualized care and treatment that meets their individualized needs. So that's also includes, again, we go back to breaking down the silos of systems. So that includes us really, really working closely with our healthcare policy and financing department as a system partner also.
Yeah, because each one of these children's situations it needs to be tailor-made for them. I mean, to service their needs, it sounds like. Again, let's direct people to the websites where they can get more information. KidsCrossing.com, HumanServices.ElPasoCo.com, or CO4Kids.org. We need to take a short break. Katanya and Lee will be back with more of The Extra in just moments. We're back with our final segment with Katanya Jones and Lee Osterley, our guests today, who are talking about the Families First Prevention Services Act and how it's going to impact the child welfare system, organizations such as the Department of Human Services for El Paso County, as well as Kids Crossing, of which Lee Osterley is the executive director. So, Lee, final segment here. Why don't you tell our audience, when does Families First go into effect?
So it goes into effect October 1st. And again, the child welfare system, the counties, the state, the providers have been working on this for a couple years. But it does go into effect October 1st, which really means those, funding mechanisms from the federal government goes into effect. And so it's Yeah, it's going to happen.
Yeah. And Ketanya, when we're talking about providing the right placements for children who are in the foster care system, it sounds like finding the ideal foster parent is really important. Who makes the ideal foster parent?
Oh, this is a fantastic question. The ideal foster parent is a person or persons. I like to tease a little bit and just say it's a human being that is open to the licensing process and open and willing to welcome children or youth and be willing to work with that child and the or youth and their family to be whole again. So that's all backgrounds, all races, all ethnicities, cultures, gender, gender identity. People that are willing to be open to the process and willing to open their home.
And is that marking a change? Because, in past decades, you might have heard that certain people's, gender outlook might have disqualified them for certain care situations. But it sounds like foster care has really tried to be inclusive for quite some time.
That's exactly right. And as a matter of fact, many of us in this field have recognized that specific targeted recruiting for LGBTQ community is absolutely necessary and critical to serve the youth in our communities and in the state of Colorado.
And Lee, what do you tell people who maybe have an interest in foster care, maybe have seen a movie or read a book that sparked an interest? What do you say to people?
I think that to find out more about it. I mean, again, there's so many misperceptions out there, well-intended. I'm not, movies like Instant Family, that's a wonderful movie. But again, it's about that, the foster parents in that movie end up adopting the sibling group they have. But on our website, we provide a lot of information, but we also encourage people to call and talk to our recruitment specialist and to ask specific questions, that pertain to them as individuals and as unique families. Again, there's a lot of choice about the kind of youth you take in your home, and we really want potential foster parents to understand the amount of support they're going to receive. They're not going to be in this alone. And not only do they get help from Kids Crossing and our professionals, but also from other foster parents. We have a team model where a group of four or five foster parents are on a team with each other. And then there's an experienced foster parent who is the lead foster parent. And they can call each other. They can call the lead foster parent for help, advice. So, to find out more, and we try to, again, provide as much information as we can. And then finally, I tell them it can be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And you get to meet new people and take part in the shaping of young minds and certainly play an important part in those young people's lives. Lee and Ketanya, thank you so much for sharing your experiences and also what your organizations do and the changes that could be impacting how your organizations work through the Families First Prevention Services Act. Hopefully people hear this and understand the need is great and understand that there are new options for people who want to become professional foster parents and what that means and how they will be servicing a need in our community. Lee and Ketanya, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Shannon. It's been good.
Thank you, Shannon.
And real quickly, let's just mention that hotline. If you suspect abuse of children or neglect of children, there's a hotline you can call to report things anonymously. It's 844-CO-4-KIDS. And if listeners want more information, they can visit humanservices.elpasoco.com or go to kidscrossing.com. You've been listening to The Extra on KRDO News Radio.